This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Noel Lim and Kusu Chuang in the studio this morning. In half an hour, we've got the breakfast grill like we do every weekday. And today, Kusu Chuang, you're speaking to Jalil Rashid, President and Group CEO of PNB. What's that conversation going to be like?
Well, the thing is, obviously, the gentleman is quite new to the job. And despite his reasonably young vintage, he's got some considerable experience in fund management with Invesco and Aberdeen, both here and overseas. So obviously, he seems to be the right man, credentially speaking, for the job. And he's got this ambition to get a third of returns from outside Malaysia within the next 2 years. Not assets, but returns. So obviously, there's going to be an element of conservativeness about it because this is PNB with unit holders savings inside. And it'll be interesting to see how he wants to outline that strategy.
Definitely something to pay attention to. PNB is a big part of the market ecosystem here in Malaysia. But right now, we're taking a look at one of our neighbours. The COVID-19 pandemic has hit all ASEAN countries, with all getting into some form of lockdown, halting most economic activities. And today, we turn to Indonesia to assess the impact on its markets. Indonesia has a record 33,000 infections and 1,930 deaths, one of the highest in the region. And its GDP will grow at 0% this year, as the global economy is expected to see its weakest performance since the Asian financial crisis in 1997-98. This was according to the World Bank. Meanwhile, the Jakarta Composite Index has been one of the worst performing major markets in Asia. With a year-to-date decline of almost 20%. I think for comparison, the KLCI is just under 1% year-to-date. So to understand why the market has performed so poorly, and also to find out if it's time for a review, we speak to Bharat Joshi, Investment Director at Aberdeen Standard Investments. Bharat, are you there on the line with us?
Yes, morning.
Good morning to you as well. What is driving the underperformance of the Jakarta Composite Index? After all, other markets are recovering from their respective lows due to the cheap liquidity in financial markets.
Yes, I guess as you mentioned, the Indonesian market is one of the major dogs this year. It's down 20% both in IDR and US dollar terms. There are a slew of factors for that divergence, but I suspect many fear the worst for the country post-COVID because a large proportion of the country is driven by consumption, which have actually been battered down in recent months.
So, well, Indonesia is gradually exiting from its lockdown, and the government has announced a stimulus package, I think in total about $90 billion. How much will this really help bolster consumption and revive the economy?
Well, the short answer is not enough. So when you look at the neighbouring countries or, you know, Japan, for example, which is spending about $1 trillion to stimulate its economy, that is actually the amount of GDP that Indonesia generates in a year. So, you know, the stimulus that has been pushed out is not sufficient. And if you look at the breakdown of where that money is heading into, it's generally towards social safety nets, especially the people that are worse off from this pandemic.
Bharat, to what extent do you think Indonesia is in a bit of a catch-22 situation? Because although the stimulus package is only less than 5% of GDP, the finance minister, Sri Mulyani, has said that that deficits will increase as a result. But, for example, for Indonesia, which does not have a reserve currency and which does have pressures on its currency, it doesn't seem to have much room to increase that stimulus any further.
I guess Indonesia, unfortunately, is stuck between a rock and a hard place. The challenge for the country is basically limited by the fiscal budget they can actually spend. It's usually, the historical deficit has always been hovering about 3%, but for the next 2 years, it's going to be about 6%. And the reason for this is because the country is, you know, is dictated by commodities, and these are generally quite cyclical in nature. But this is one of the reasons why the government is, you know, very serious about pushing its reforms in diversifying its revenue base towards more manufacturing and services.
So are you concerned about Indonesia's twin deficit then, both the fiscal and current? That usually has an impact on the rupiah. Do you see that coming under pressure again?
So if I were to look back over the past decade, whenever the country actually has a twin deficit is whenever commodity prices actually decline, so when oil prices actually shoots up. But in this sort of environment, it's not the case. It's actually in the reverse. We are having one of the reasons why the strong performance of the IDR is because commodity prices is projected to do well this year, given the amount of QE money that's being injected into the world today. And also because oil prices have been so weak, given the slowing demand globally.
Yeah, Bharat, despite the virus numbers being quite magnified, anecdotally, people within Indonesia and Jakarta say that the numbers can be much higher than that because of underreporting. What other ammunition do you think the Jokowi government has in terms of trying to rejuvenate the economy beyond what we see in terms of stimulus spending?
I think, you know, the government has actually, one of the reasons I think they've done something right is they decided not to push on their infrastructure spending, especially in the move towards the new capital, because that's going to soak up a lot of money. So they're rechanneling a lot of that budget into healthcare and social spending, and also perhaps capitalizing some of the banks where they're going to see some asset quality blow-ups, predominantly on state-owned enterprises. So I think, you know, the main concern now the government is thinking about is, we're in this pandemic, there are going to be challenges. We need to resolve them because we don't want it to be a systematic risk going forward.
Given all this, what investment strategy would you advocate for the Indonesian equities markets?
I think, given the amount of money that's been printed out globally from QE, Japan, Europe, and the US, I would still advocate for equities. And a lot of that money, if you follow a basket of countries, Indonesia will definitely reap along, you know, some form of inflows down the road. So I would actually advocate to actually be a bit cautious short term, but be constructive and positive longer term. And I would definitely be in favor of cyclicals. So anything to do with cement, property, this will definitely be benefiting down the road.
Aside those, are there any other investment opportunities that you're paying attention to? Any particular names in your mind?
So typically I like the big banks in Indonesia. So the BCA, the Bank Mandiri, the Bank Rakyat. That would actually get a lot of inflows, given that it's one of the largest market caps on the index. The other thing is, going forward, we are going to go into an environment which perhaps it's going to be low inflation, but eventually high inflation, because a lot of that money will eventually go into asset classes. So banks will definitely benefit going forward.
Yeah, obviously, as you mentioned, the financial sector, many of the biggest names like Niaga and Danamon and Mandiri all trading well below book value. Is there a proposition if you need to invest in Indonesia to be in the financial services sector? And to what extent, in which names in particular?
So if you look at the financial sector, it forms about close to 40% of the index. So it's one of the largest sectors in terms of market cap and percentages. So you have to be exposed to financials. The only challenge is, because in Niaga's case, it's actually considered as a mid-sized bank. It's obviously among the top five, but still considered as mid-sized. The top four banks, sort of expose themselves close to 80% of the total credit market and deposit market. So there's a very big gap between the top banks and the mid-sized banks. And usually, in this sort of environment, a lot of the depositors will run for safety, and they will generally go towards the bigger banks, which they are more comfortable. So the Mandiris, the Bank Rakyat, and also the Bank Central Asia.
I suppose with Indonesia, we should also still be cautious. What would you avoid?
So generally, I think, you know, in terms of stocks, I would, in sectors, I will avoid the hard retailers, because given, you know, the habits that will change post this pandemic, is that people will start buying more stuff online. So I think, you know, people are going to be a lot more digital savvy going forward. I would also avoid developers which actually carry standalone malls or office spaces on their balance sheets, because this will drastically change going forward. Any particular sectors involving tourism or hotels would not see any recovery in the short term or midterm.
Marla, do you have any thoughts on commodities or even the mining companies?
Actually, at the moment, I quite enjoy, having exposure to commodities. I think, as we have seen in the past, And, you know, it's very easy to learn from lessons in the past, especially from GFC and the QE. The first sectors to actually have a strong bull run over 3 years was commodities. So you name it, coal, copper, gold, etc. And Indonesia, over the last 3 years, post-GFC, benefited tremendously. So I would definitely be exposed to commodities.
All right, Bharat, thank you so much for joining us on the line this morning. That was Bharat Joshi, Investment Director at Aberdeen Standard Investments based in Indonesia. Up next, we'll be taking a look at the tax incentives within the Penjana Economic Package with Jagdeep Singh, tax leader at PwC Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.